This is the Federal Communications Commission hearing on media consolidation held in Seattle on November 30th, 2006. The hearing was not considered an official hearing by the FCC because of the absence of the three Republican commissioners. In attendance were Commissioners Michael Copps and David Edelstein. The hearing was organized in part by the media activist group Reclaim the Media.
The FCC is accepting written comments on media ownership consolidation until December 21st. To get more information and to file comments online, please visit reclaimthemedia.org, stopbigmedia.com, or fcc.gov.
To those of you in the audience, good evening. And to those of you who are listening on the radio or via a streaming video and audio throughout the Northwest radio community on stations as far away as Anchorage, Alaska, we welcome you also. I'm Frank Weffin, publisher of the Seattle Times, one of America's very last locally owned and independent newspapers. One of only a handful willing to report on and oppose newspaper and media consolidation and to oppose the control of access to news and information by a handful of powerful corporations. Five fingers on one hand. That's what's come to pass as the rapacious capitalists have taken over America's media. Today, five corporations control a majority of all of our media. Almost all democracies the world have seen have died within 300 years of their founding. Most of them implode from within. At 200 and some years, America has moved dangerously close to the fail-safe line for our survival. We are in the latter stages of one of the most important battles which will determine if we will survive. It is the battle which pits democracy against the powerful who seek to co-opt our free press, control the news, and control the access to news, journalism, and information. It is a battle our country has fought before, but never with today's consequences. It is a battle which Thomas Jefferson clearly understood when he wrote that, quote, "I foresee the days American democracy will have to fight the rapacious capitalists," unquote. Good journalism, watchdog journalism, local journalism, these are the essential oxygen of self-government. From the beginning of our democracy, marked by the ill-fated Sedition Act, the powerful, be they political, economic, or ideological, have always followed their natural tendency to protect themselves and to solidify their power, partly by stifling, intimidating, chilling, and now consolidation of both the creation of our news and the access to it. Through more than 200 years, our free press has ultimately withstood every attack, enabling our democracy to grow from a handful of privileged white landowners to the most egalitarian democracy the world has seen. That wondrous document, the U.S. Constitution, gave us our judiciary and our free fourth estate as the two legs on our four-legged constitutional stool. These two legs were intended to provide the checks and balances so self-government could be perpetuated and so all citizens could be protected from the money changers and the powerful. Frighteningly, the battlefield for democracy has tilted decidedly away from the people as the rapacious capitalists have been strengthened with a new and ominous weapon. That weapon is newspaper and media consolidation and the control of the information distribution channels. Suddenly, our constitutional stool has lost one of its four legs and is teetering precipitously. During the last 30 years, America has seen an unprecedented concentration of power and economic control. Nowhere is this more evident than in the takeover of our journalistic, creative, literary, news, and media functions. The takeover began in earnest in the 70s when absentee corporate owners began gobbling up the nation's newspapers. By the mid-90s, they had won the newspaper battle, controlling about 85% of America's daily newspapers, leaving in their wake massive journalistic disinvestment, which has ended most of our independent and watchdog journalism today. We are now fast losing the localism which is essential to our sense of community and self-government. How can we possibly control and fight the faceless absentee money changers as long as they control and can prevent us from knowing what they're doing? Once the nation's newsrooms were tamed, like a blight of hungry locusts, the rapacious capitalists moved on to the next fertile field. That's their takeover of the nation's television and radio airwaves. They used their obscene economic power and secretive insider influence to see that the telecommunications law of 1996 was enacted, a law which would be their Trojan horse to begin the takeover of our airwaves. Today, they control both the news, which is primarily still generated from newspapers, and the multiple electronic distribution channels, which for the most part simply reuse the news and information produced by newspapers. We're very fortunate tonight to have with us two of our democracy's most courageous warriors in this battle, FCC Commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein. Their persistence, their passion, their articulation, and their courage has been vital to creating a national awareness of this crisis and to fueling the amazing grassroots response which must continue to build if we are to reclaim our independent press. The mission of the FCC is localism, public service, and diversity. Unfortunately, the majority who control the FCC have lost their way. With patriots like Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein, there is hope that the agency will get its groove back and localism, public service, and diversity will again become paramount. We need to keep all the current FCC rules in place, including the ban on newspaper television cross-ownership. We need to reinstitute the FCC regulations and controls which have been cast aside in recent years. We need to insist on localism. We need to insist on public service on our airwaves. After all, we do own them. We need to insist on diversity, diversity in thought and diversity of ownership. We need new legislation controlling and limiting in some fashion the ownership of newspapers. About 50 years ago, journalist Walter Lippmann said he was, quote, secure in his belief that American democracy would endure precisely because there is, I believe, a fundamental reason why the American press is strong enough to remain free. That reason is that the American newspapers, large and small, and without exception, belong to a town, a city, at the most, to a region. Lippmann concluded by saying, there is safety in numbers and in diversity in being spread out and having deep roots in many places. Only in variety is there freedom. Today's absentee newspaper ownership and media concentration are Walter Lippmann's worst nightmare. Fortunately, this is still a democracy. Even if the concentrated and controlled media mainstream won't tell the story, we still get to speak out and be heard by those whom we elect. The hour is very late, but there is still time to save our free press and democracy. Welcome to the battle. With that, I would like to introduce another one of our heroes who really understands this battle and is a wonderful warrior in it. our very own Congressman Jay Inslee.
Thank you, and thank for Frank's leadership on this issue. Thank you for coming out tonight in the snowy weather. I just want to make sure you know we don't care how snowy it is in Seattle. We're going to do something about global warming in Congress, just so you'll know. Of course it is. I want to thank the Seattle Times, who've been doing some great work on reporting on global warming as well. Well, I want to tell you why I'm here tonight. There's one thing I know, and that is the United States perhaps could do without a Senate. Perhaps the United States could do without a House of Representatives, but it cannot do without a free and diversified media. This is the lifeblood, which is another way of paraphrasing Thomas Jefferson, who basically said, if he had to make a choice of an America without a Congress or an America without a free media, he would do without Congress. And the reason is that the information is truly the sustaining lifeblood of democracy. And without a free flow of diversified, multiple sources of information, that beautiful organism we know as democracy will surely starve. And there are three reasons why I want to tell you why I feel so strongly about that, and why we have to stop any repeated efforts to stop media consolidation. First is a fellow who's a neighbor of mine's son, who tonight is in Baghdad, having been called back for his second tour of duty in Iraq. And if you want to see what happens to American democracy when you have a failure to have a free, flowing, combative debate about an issue where questions were not asked of its government with the rigor and aggressiveness that we should have had, look at Iraq. We need an aggressive, diversified, question-asking media to prevent failures of democracy like Iraq. I feel strongly that this effort... We have seen, unfortunately, a consolidation that does create conditions where that can happen again. Secondly, I want to say that the jury is in with a guilty verdict, of this question of whether or not local or foreign ownership has an impact on local news. Perhaps the most important news is our local news. It certainly has been during the weather the last several days. But what some research has shown by the FEC itself, of some research that they tried to suppress, concluded that when there is foreign ownership outside of the local community, you get 20% less local information in your local TV coverage. We need to have a policy that stands up for local coverage. That one-fifth diminution of local coverage will not stand. Let's stand up for our local coverage. Third issue. Some have suggested that Congress and the FCC are obsolete because the internet will solve all of these woes. That now we have the internet, we don't have to have rules against massive octopuses of corporate interlocking ownership of consolidated media. That is not true, and I'll tell you why I know that. The internet's a wonderful thing. It can allow our teenagers to talk 24/7 and adults not know about it, so it does some great things. But it can't solve this problem. I'll tell you why. Some recent research by a group called Crawford and Johnson found that 75% of people who use the internet check out local news, essentially from local TV stations and newspapers, through the internet at least twice a week. Even though the internet is serving as a conduit for information, the seed germinating source remains local media companies. And to maintain that diversity, we must maintain these rules against consolidation. So those are three reasons I'm here tonight to thank you for your participation in this democratic experiment. And I want to comment on what you have already achieved. Last year, the FCC, because they would not listen to these two gentlemen, attempted an end run around the democratic tradition to adopt a rule that would essentially allow consolidation to go off half-cocked. These two gentlemen ran around the country and let Americans know what was at risk. And because of their leadership and your response, and we were out at the hub, many of you and I, a year or so ago, we stopped the FCC in its tracks, and we're going to stop them again in the tracks if they want to allow this consolidation to occur. We will succeed because... will succeed because of people like you around the country making their voices heard, and we're going to make sure Congress hears that message. Now, let me tell you, there's some good news in Congress. I think there can be a developing bipartisan effort in Congress to make sure that democracy is protected. This is something that Republicans and Democrats can equally share importance about. This is not a partisan issue, and I'm hoping that ultimately a bill that I have co-sponsored, H.R. 2052, the Preservation of Localism Bill, can prevent consolidation by preventing ownership of over 35% nationally, and H.R. 2462, the Protect Diversity in Media, to stop the FCC from going down this way. I believe we can have a bipartisan red state and blue state success. We all believe in democracy. We all believe in a liberty and a media. Keep your voices loud and strong, and we'll have a democracy for another couple hundred years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman. I'd like to now introduce the co-chair for tonight, the hearing co-chair, Sandra Maeda. Did I butcher it? Sandra is a 30-year media democracy activist who volunteers with Reclaim the Media Now. Sandra?
Thank you. I'm Sharon Maeda. It is my honor to welcome you on behalf of Reclaim the Media to this hearing. The last hearing we had was in 2003, and Commissioner Copps and Adelstein have both said that the hearing in Seattle was one of the finest in the country, and we know that we look forward to the same thing again tonight. Back 30 years ago, when I first started in broadcast media, there was a fairness doctrine, which meant that at least the issues of the day could be discussed from different perspectives. There was an annual ascertainment process by which broadcasters were required to find out what the important issues of the local community were and had to show some level of coverage of those issues. There was also a minority ownership provision, since people of color had not owned broadcast entities. There was a provision that allowed them to acquire frequencies in radio or television. None of those things exist today. The landscape is far worse than it has been in the past. And thanks to these two gentlemen over here, we are going to fight to make sure that we don't slide further down the hill and that hopefully we can bring things back to a level where the airwaves do indeed belong to the people. Let me just say a little bit about the FCC. It is made up of five commissioners appointed by the President of the United States, three from the President's party and two from the other party. Commissioner Copps and Adelstein are the two from the other party. They cannot get their colleagues to come and listen to the people. So it's very important that you're here, and they work very, very hard to get our message back to their colleagues. Commissioner Michael J. Copps first became a commissioner in 2001. He is now serving in his second term. Prior to that, he served in the U.S. government with distinction as Assistant Secretary of Trade Development at the U.S. Department of Commerce. He was also Deputy Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Basic Industries. Prior to that, he went to Washington, D.C. to serve on the staff of Senator Ernest Hollings, and served as his chief of staff for over 12 years. And by the way, Senator Hollings was a real leader in trying to keep the airwaves for the people for many, many years. Commissioner Copps has also worked in the private sector in a Fortune 500 company and at a major trade association. So for those who say that, you know, they are the bleeding heart liberals, Commissioner Copps has credentials in the corporate sector as well. Before going to Washington, Commissioner Copps was a professor of U.S. history at Loyola University of the South. He received a BA from Wofford College and earned a PhD from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. If there were a Nobel Prize for saving U.S. democracy, certainly Commissioner Copps would be at the top of the list. And another laureate for democracy would be Commissioner Jonathan S. Adelstein. He was appointed to the FCC as a commissioner in 2002, and he is now serving in his second term. Prior to that, for 15 years, he worked as senior staff in the United States Senate for the likes of Senator Tom Daschle, David Pryor, Harry Reid, who is now the majority leader of the Senate, and Donald Regal. He also is a historian, and his academic positions including teaching at the Department of History at Harvard and Stanford. Commissioner Adelstein received his BA in political science and a master's in history from Stanford University, and also studied at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. And we also know from having seen him at some of the conferences that he plays a mean harmonica and has been known to play the blues many times. So with that, I'm going to introduce Commissioner Copps, followed by Commissioner Adelstein.
What an introduction. You don't get introductions like that very often. I was out in the Midwest somewhere recently, and the person who introduced me, I think, was trying to be real nice about it and all, but he said, "Now we're going to hear the real dope from Washington, D.C." Thank you, everyone, for giving up your valuable time, which I'm sure could have been spent in more entertaining fashion this evening, to come out and participate in this grassroots dialogue. Thanks to Congressman Jay Inslee for being here tonight and for his really outstanding leadership on the issues that we are going to be discussing. You have so many good members of Congress in the state. Certainly thanks are due to Senator Maria Cantwell for the leadership she brings to these issues on the Senate side, particularly through her membership in the Commerce Committee there. Thanks to Reclaim the Media for what they did tonight, bringing us all together, the Seattle Times, KBCS, Community Radio, Minority Executive Directors Coalition, and the University of Washington Department of Communication. And thanks to the library for giving us this beautiful venue. Finally, a special thanks to my good friend Frank Blethyn, who has been such an eloquent and stirring voice on media issues for so very long. At a time when so many publishers and so many media companies are pushing for new rules to allow even more consolidation, Frank understands how precious journalism is, and he has given eloquent voice to the idea that serving the public interest should be the North Star for anyone running a newspaper. One of the very first meetings I attended on ownership was right here in Seattle. It was one of the best meetings, one of the liveliest, one of the most articulate groups of people. Tonight, that dialogue on the media continues, and we're back here again to see what's happened in the last 2 or 3 years, for better or for worse. And it could not be at a timelier moment, because right now the FCC is in the midst of a hugely important proceeding that will decide for years and years how our media is going to look, our radio, our television, newspapers, cable, even the internet. Will our media help us to expand democracy, or will it primarily serve the commercial interests of a few huge players? Just a very brief history here. 3 years ago, as most of you know, then FCC Chairman Michael Powell, over the objections of Jonathan Adelstein and myself, severely cut back, some would say eviscerated, the rules we had to check big media's seemingly endless appetite for more consolidation. The Powell Commission passed new rules allowing a single media company to own, in some single markets, up to 3 television stations, 8 radio stations, the newspaper, already a monopoly in most places, the cable networks, cable distributor, even the internet portals. you have to ask yourself, how does that serve democracy? How does that serve diversity in our system? And just as bad as what they did was how the commission went about it. Behind closed doors, can you imagine that? Authorizing a sea change, a real sea change in how the people's airwaves are used without even bothering to ask the people how they feel about it. But that's what they did, and it was a near disaster for America. Except they miscalculated. They didn't think anybody was interested in this. But 3 million people contacted the FCC. When I went down there in 2001, I didn't think 3 million people knew there was a place called the Federal Communications Commission. But people knew. And Congress rose up, too, under the leadership of Jay Inslee and others on the House side and folks on the Senate side. And then the courts also got involved. This was a citizen victory because the court sent those rules back to the commission saying they are badly flawed. Do it over. Do it again. That was a victory. That was good. But now it's reality check time because we are right back to square one. The same media interests still wanting to loosen the rules. Still wanting to have more consolidation, beating the drums for the same thing. And they have the money and they have power. So if we're going to succeed on this and then go from there to a broader dialogue on the future of media in our democracy, it will be, again, just like last time, because of citizen action from folks like you in this audience and your families and your friends and your neighbors in communities all across this land of ours. And this time we have to ensure that the proceeding is open and transparent instead of commissioners hiding in their offices in Washington. This time, let all the FCC commissioners come to Seattle. They were here tonight, and let them all get around America and discover what's happening outside of that fabled Washington Beltway. You know, it's curious, have you ever noticed how many public figures there are in Washington, D.C., who are ever complaining and moaning and groaning about life inside the Beltway, yet try to get them outside the Beltway to come meet the American people? It's awfully darn hard to do. One of life's little ironies, I guess. We begin this discussion tonight right where we should, the fact that it is the people who own the airwaves. No broadcaster, no business, no special interest owns an airwave in the United States of America. Airwaves belong to you, they belong to us, and my friends, now is the time to assert our ownership rights. I have seen all around this country that too many stations are absentee owned and operated from far under business plans that do scant justice to the public interest. You see local newsrooms being cut down. You see local entertainers being shut out of the airways, local musicians. Here's something else that troubles me greatly, and that is, what is happening to minorities in this age of consolidated media? Minority issues are all but ignored. Minorities depicted on television more often than not in caricature. Latinos aren't covered for the good things going on in their communities. The camera focuses instead on illegal immigrants climbing fences and crossing the borders to get into America. African Americans aren't covered for what they contribute. No, they're far more often seen in the crime segment of local news, and actually there are not too many other segments but the crime segment in local news. And a lot of this is caused by the fact that minorities have been virtually shut out of media ownership. People of color comprise almost a third of the population of the United States of America. You know how many of the full-power TV stations they own? Just a little bit over 3%. And ownership matters. I go further than that. I think ownership rules. And unless and until we find a way to increase minority ownership of our media, this sad situation is not going to improve. The stakes in this proceeding, then, are enormous. There's no way around it. Fundamental values like the folks have talked about here tonight, localism, competition, diversity, preserving our democracy, these aren't luxuries. These are essential things that we are entitled to have and that we must have. This issue of media consolidation has been my highest priority since I went to the FCC 5 years ago. Now, I know our country has a lot of problems. We have a lot of really tough issues to work through. Confronting us now are issues of peace and war, of finding and keeping jobs, developing racial justice and equal opportunity, obtaining health care for our families, educating our kids, list goes on. And one of those issues may trump every other issue in the minds of you folks in this audience as individuals tonight. But here's what I think. Even if the future of our media is not your number one issue, it ought to be your second most important issue, and that's because Americans get their input and develop their views about all these other critical issues that you care about through the funnel and the filter of big media. Now, if you're okay with that and you think you can bring your issue home that way, fine, God bless you. But if you think that issue that you're really interested in would fare better in an open and a diverse and a competitive and a more locally oriented environment, then you should think seriously about putting this media consolidation issue way up front. We have a steep climb to win the victory in this fight, especially if we see victory as not just stopping bad new rules, but going back and fixing the old rules that got us into this mess in the first place, and then going from there to reassert and reinvigorate the public interest standards that we used to have for broadcasting. Now you might say, well, he's talking all about the money and the power of the special interests, and yet he says he's optimistic. Why is he optimistic? I am optimistic because I think that we have the people on our side on this issue. 99.9% of those 3 million people that contacted the FCC were against what Chairman Powell was trying to do. It's not, as you remarked, blue state or red state, liberal or conservative. Everywhere I go across this country, and Jonathan and I have been in every corner of this country in the last 3 years, you see a coalition, you see everybody on a grassroots, all-American, fundamental issue. So I'm more than happy to take my chances with the good sense of the American people, and we can win. Now think about what a victory could mean. Because if you and I do what we should be doing, at the end of this debate, we can have airwaves of, by, and for the American people, and we can have a media that reflects and a media that nourishes our democracy. Media democracy. Don't you think that's worth fighting for? I do. So let's... So let's talk tonight. Let's discuss tonight. Let's fight tomorrow, and let's win. Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody. It's so nice to be here in Washington. It just felt such a warm feeling coming down. We're down here, and all, like a bunch of angels up there, just this warmth is coming down to us with that warm applause we got and sharing your introduction. It's just great to be out here. It's a breath of fresh air to get out of the swamp of Washington into the real Washington, even a snowy and rainy one. And I want to thank the organizers. Sharon's right that when we came here, it was one of the best hearings we'd ever attended. And I think it's partly a tribute to Reclaim the Media and Jonathan Lawson and all of his team. I'd like to thank all the other organizers too, UW. Of course, we were there last time when we had an amazing turnout as we do tonight. And of course, all of you for being here. What a fabulous thing for you to do with this weather. You know, it really reflects the spirit of this community because you have some of the greatest leaders here that really support what Commissioner Copps and I are trying to do in Washington. Jay Inslee, you heard, is an incredible fighter for media democracy and for your interests. Against the interests of some of the most powerful companies in this country. And it takes a lot of guts to do that. And your senator, Maria Cantwell, who's on the Commerce Committee, has been a fantastic leader on this issue as well. And they're standing up to some of the most powerful interests in the country. And then, of course, there's Frank Bleffen, who is a blessing for those of us who care about this issue. I told him tonight I think he might be the one with his finger in the dike on this newspaper broadcast cross-ownership issue. There's these... special few people that hold up the whole world. And right now, Frank is in a position where he is a critical element in keeping this from spiraling out of control, just as he was in the fight in 2003. And it takes enormous guts for him, too, because all of his friends and colleagues in the industry, I think, continually are on his case about it. And it's more difficult than that. I mean, you can't imagine the pressures that he's under and the kind of courage and bravery that he's shown in continuing to fight as he has. Thank you, Frank. When we were here 3 years ago, we didn't know how it was going to fare. I was really worried, frankly, that we were going to be overwhelmed by those forces I talked about and that Mike talked about. But when I came here, I was so heartened by the kind of articulate statements that we got from the public. And I think that it was the efforts by people here, like Reclaim the Media, like all of you that showed up, that really turned it around. People rose up in outrage here in Seattle and all across the country at the attempt by then Chairman Powell to roll back those media ownership protections. But unless we rise up again, we may be headed down the same path. But I really know about your noble spirit here, your commitment to this issue, your passion about this issue, and your having studied it and become aware of its intricacies. I really think that with you here leading the fight with us, that we won't let it happen again. Now we're going to be able to fight and do it. I'll always remember that night. We had a program at the Experience Music Project where they had some thumping music going on. I was loving it. There was folks coming around. And one woman just kind of came up to me out of the darkness and she said, "Please don't forget about us as you work on the future of the media." And she had this look of real fear and concern, and I said to her, "I wouldn't." And I say to you that I came back here today because I didn't forget. I always tried to watch out for you, and I'm here today to say I'm still listening. It's refreshing to hear the voices of the people on this issue, because after all, the law says our primary obligation is to serve the public interest. That's all the law says. It doesn't give us a lot of detail, but it doesn't say go and serve the interests of the media giants that seek to profit by using the public airwaves. Now, unlike these powerful media companies, you don't have an army of lobbyists in Washington that are well-paid and their Gucci loafers wandering the halls. But then again, why should you? That's supposedly the job of the FCC if we truly carried out the law. But unfortunately, in recent years, the FCC really has failed to step up and protect your interests. We've forgotten that the public airwaves belong to the American people. We've forgotten that it's the public interest that's paramount, not the special commercial interests of the media giants. We've forgotten that the ownership of broadcast media is about the very heart of our democracy. These days, we hear a lot about the importance of spreading freedom and democracy around the globe. Well, how about improving the quality of freedom and democracy right here in America, right here in Seattle? Now, Sharon mentioned that I'm a musician, and you know, Seattle, of course, is where grunge music was founded. And how does something like that get started if it doesn't get played on the local radio? How would Motown get started if it didn't get heard in the radio in Detroit? But these days, as you go across the country, it's the same everywhere you go, from coast to coast. I think today, if Elvis Presley was playing, he'd probably throw down his guitar in disgust because he couldn't get played on the radio. I was on my way here, and I rented a great movie I recommend to all of you, on a good media consolidation movie, as it turns out, The Prairie Home Companion, about this homey little show on the radio in a town, and this big media conglomerate out of Texas decides to buy up that local station from the local owner, and guess what? They're going to take that show off the air. Before it goes, though, one woman says, "When this show goes, pretty soon there won't be anything left on radio but people yelling at you and computers playing music." And that's pretty much what it's come to. But we license these stations to local communities to serve local audiences. But what's happened? We see fewer and fewer media companies gaining more and more control over the means of distributing ideas. That means fewer small businesses, fewer and fewer women and minorities, African Americans, Latinos, Native Americans can use the public airwaves to contribute to our national experience. And Mike Copps explained the result, the incredible distortion of the reality of America that we see on the media. When it comes to local newscasts, they're dominated with sensationalism, dominated with crime stories. If it bleeds, it leads. There's little useful information, and even less government and election information that people can use to make the decisions in a democracy. Because we succeeded in rolling back those rules that Michael Powell tried to foist upon us, I think we have the opportunity now to get it right, to go back. And that's why we're here today, because we want to hear your views on the current rules. We really do want to hear from you, because everywhere we go, we get incredible insight from people about how the community is serving, how the media is serving your community, what's happening right here in this area. But the way the majority set up the debate this year over the objection of Commissioner Copps and I, you might have no chance to see the final product before we're forced to vote on it. You deserve better. Especially after the court recognized last time the importance of public input, you need to demand that you have the chance to review specific proposals before and not after they're finalized. You need to demand that the FCC complete a localism proceeding that we've had going on for 3 years before, not after, we rule on media ownership. And you need to demand that we properly study and support any changes we make with facts this time and not with blind ideology. You have a relatively dynamic media here in Seattle compared to some places around the country that we go, but imagine if one company was able to own two local TV stations, the local newspaper, 8 radio stations, the cable company, and all the internet portals that go along with that. What would this community be deprived of? How much less news would you get? How many fewer reporters would you have chasing the stories? And how much poorer would this community be? I mean, already we see the if it bleeds, it leads approach. It might be good for the ratings and the bottom line, but when it's the lifeblood of our democracy we're talking about, that's what's bleeding when positive aspects of our communities aren't covered. When in-depth coverage of local news and public affairs disappears, when real investigative journalism is replaced with video news releases that aren't disclosed to you, when local news becomes a series of crime stories punctuated by traffic and weather, our democracy suffers. One study found that community public affairs programming accounted for less than 0.5% of the local TV coverage in this country. But guess what? Infomercials accounted for 14.4% of paid programming for things like ab crunchers. So, well, we got all these infomercials, maybe we're getting tight abs, but I'm afraid we're getting a flabby democracy. And we can do better. As the president of the Writer Guild in West said, that homogenization is good for milk, but it's bad for politics. So my friends, the American people here own the public airwaves. You own the public airwaves. We're here to hear from the owners, because we're just the people that are watching out for you, supposedly, and that's what Mike and I are doing, and I hope we can get all the commissioners to do it. If your voice is heard loud and clear, we can give them no other choice. Media ownership is about the power to control your airwaves. You've licensed it to people to serve your interests, and we're going to make sure that they're held accountable. So tonight we want to hear from you about how well the FCC is doing its job here in Seattle, how well the local media outlets are serving your interests, reflecting the diversity of the people here and the diversity of interests and concerns that you have. So as a legendary statesman from the South, that is California, Willie Brown said, it takes greater skills to listen than to speak. So I'm now going to exercise my skills and listen to you for as long as you will be here this evening. We'll hear you out. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you, Commissioner Copps and Commissioner Adelstein. Next, we will go to those few invited speakers that we asked, that I mentioned earlier this evening. But first, I want to announce that there are little postcards that are going up and down the aisles. Please sign them and pass them back to this side. Alice Wold here has a whole packet of them. We're going to be hand delivering these to the FCC. So make sure that you sign it. You don't even have to put a stamp on it. Just send it back down the aisle and we will collect those and deliver them. We have a timekeeper who is right here in the front in the purple sweater. To those of you that are speaking, you will speak from this podium, but please make sure that you keep an eye on her. She will be showing brightly colored signs to give you a sense of the time that you have left. The invited speakers will introduce themselves, but I'd like to take a point of personal privilege to introduce the first one. She was once the editor of an occasional minority column that I wrote for the other daily newspaper in Seattle, the PI. And she is now the chair of the Seattle City Council Committee that oversees telecommunications. Please welcome Jean Godden.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Adelstein and Copps, for giving Seattleites an opportunity to to speak on this matter of grave concern to all those who value an informed citizenry. As a career journalist, 30 years as a journalist, and now as an elected member of the Seattle City Council, I am perhaps more alarmed than most over proposals for unprecedented consolidation of the media. In recent years, consolidation already has drastically reduced the independent avenues of communications in this country, as you know. To allow more consolidation through the ability to own TV and radio stations, as well as newspapers, in a single market is a very scary prospect for a free people. In past years, we in the Seattle metropolitan region have had access to more independent outlets than most, but we too have seen consolidation among papers and the electronic media. The number of independent voices has been slowly but drastically reduced, and many of those voices have been silenced forever. Recognizing that loss, the Seattle City Council on Monday, November 27, 2006, joined a coalition of consumer, public interest, media reform, and organized labor groups and passed Resolution 30937, supporting a bill of media rights. This resolution, you probably know, is not a first. It builds upon a 2003 City Council Resolution 30581, and it rightly observes that a free and vibrant media comprised of diverse voices and opinion is the lifeblood of American democracy. I brought for each of the commissioners a copy of this resolution. It was co-sponsored by the council president, Nick Licata, and by me, and it was voted upon unanimously by the Seattle City Council. It quotes a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that the First Amendment protects the public's right to uninhibited marketplace of ideas in which truth will prevail, and calls for suitable access to social, political, aesthetic, moral, and other ideas and experiences. What matters greatly to the city also is a parallel concern, and I'm sure you're aware of it. The attempts to limit the ability of local government to negotiate with their cable providers. It was through such negotiation that earlier this year, Seattle was able to expand provision for a citizen access network. The franchise agreement provides free access to the internet for schools, low-income, libraries, and immigrant communities. Finally, it enables Seattle's municipal channel, Channel 21, to broadcast 12 hours of arts programming for the next 10 years. We're very proud of this, and we hope that we will be able to continue to regulate our cable franchise. Without local access in these areas, we may not be able to preserve small, independent voices that are essential in a democracy. It is not freedom from, but freedom for. Not the right to broadcast and publish, but the right to be informed that is at the heart of the First Amendment. Commissioners, I want to thank you for your work on this issue and for listening to Seattle citizens regarding their concern on this issue. The Seattle City Council urges the commissioners to preserve and protect a multitude of voices rather than granting monopoly rights to those who can own a broadcast station using the public airwaves. I brought with me copies of this and also some remarks from Nick Licata, our council president, that he made on the passage of this Media Bill of Rights resolution. And I'll read just a little bit of it. He says, over the past 25 years, I have witnessed a significant lessening of local community representation in various forms of broadcast communications media. One example of such lessening is the elimination of certain public service requirements for TV and radio broadcasters. In Seattle, I've seen a gradual reduction of programming relevant to local community interests. I have noticed a direct correlation between the rising concentration of media ownership and a lessening of diverse voices and opinions found in newspapers. I think it would be a mistake to interpret the fact there are many more sources of news, information, and entertainment than there were years ago with an expectation that more sources necessarily produces a greater variety. Even as the number of media outlets increase, content conforms to fewer and fewer owners of those outlets. I urge you to join with Seattle and other cities across the U.S. in supporting the right of local communities to have more representation by limiting media ownership concentration. And this is signed Nick Licata, our council president. Thank you, commissioners.
Gentlemen, how are you today? Thank you very much for making the trip to be here. Quick 30-second introduction. My name is John Carlson. I was the Republican nominee for governor here in 2000, took home the silver medal in that particular contest, despite the support of so many people here in the room. I am the founder and former president of a free market think tank here in Washington State, the Washington Policy Center. I've sponsored several statewide initiatives, and for a dozen years, I have been a radio talk show host on station KVI. I sincerely regret that Mr. Martin, Ms. Tate, and Mr. McDowell couldn't be here today to join you. For one thing, if they had, there would be at least four Republicans in the room. But more to the point, gentlemen, it would also give me a chance to show them that the effects of media consolidation on the ground here in this Washington are far different from what it may appear in the skybox from the other Washington. When deregulation leads to competition, that is a good thing. When it leads, however, to massive consolidation and the concentration of more and more power on the airwaves in fewer and fewer hands, this is a cause of genuine concern. Now, here's again the reality on the ground in this Washington, in my industry, the radio industry. Of the 30 largest radio stations in Seattle, there's about 40 that you can get a signal from, but of the top 30, 90% are owned by media companies outside the state. There are only three radio stations in Seattle anymore that are locally owned among the top 30. In addition, there is not a single radio station among those top 30 that is singularly owned. All of the radio stations are owned by chains. Now, there's lots of businesses that have chains these days, banking, retail, restaurants, but a competitor can start a local bank, a competitor can start a restaurant. The number of radio signals is finite. It's limited. There needs to be a referee to protect the ability of smaller, locally owned media companies to compete. And the FCC is that referee. Because at a certain point, consolidation doesn't lead to competition. It inhibits competition. There are some of... I got a hand out of this crowd. That is not something that I expected. However, that is something that other free market conservatives like Bill Sapphire understand, but it is not something that corporate interests are going to acknowledge, because corporate interests look out for the interest of the corporation, not for the principles of competition. Decisions on which shows to run, when, where, and why by radio stations that are owned by outside chains increasingly have nothing to do with that station or sometimes even that market. Now, let me give you a quick illustration of that. Several years ago, a local radio station here in Seattle, locally owned, decided to compete with the station that was running the Seattle Mariners games. They wanted to run the Mariners games, and they put together their proposal, and the station that had been running the Mariner games for 15, 18 years, they made their presentation, and the locally owned company won the rights to broadcast the Mariners. It's good old-fashioned competition. Now, the company, out-of-state company that owned a group of radio stations, including the one that lost the Mariners, decided to get back at the locally owned company by going after one of their popular syndicated hosts. And again, competition was anticipated, but the syndicate company said, you know what? We have interests with the group owner back in some of the larger markets back east, so we're just going to move that host off your station to one of these other stations owned by this group. In other words, there was no competition for this talent. It had nothing to do with a station. It had nothing to do with his market. The decision was based on things on the other side of the country. That is an example of how consolidation is actually undermining and inhibiting competition. Now, the rebuttal to all this, and I think we've all heard it, is that there's more sources of news, information, entertainment for people today than ever before, thanks to the internet, thanks to cable, thanks to satellite radio and other forms of communication. That is true. However, that is not what the FCC says when they are addressing the issue of indecency on the airwaves. When the issue of nudity or language comes up, the FCC says it doesn't matter what's on cable, doesn't matter what's on satellite radio, it doesn't matter what's on the internet. Our focus is on the public's interest, on the public's airwaves, because the public owns them, and we have a responsibility to safeguard that public interest. So, gentlemen, when it comes to local news and programming, shouldn't the standard be the same? Shouldn't the FCC focus exclusively on the airwaves that it regulates, just as it does when it takes up the issue of decency? Let me also point out in concluding that while conservatives like myself love the market, we also believe that local government is closer to the people than distant government, because local knowledge is often the best knowledge. Local ownership is the best way to preserve local content. If you have stations with syndicated music, syndicated talent, basically what you've got there is a jukebox. But local talent, local content, local entertainment, local talk, local news especially, is a local preserve, and it is best safeguarded by local ownership. I hope the FCC will consider this when deciding that excessive consolidation often undermines this voice. Thanks very much. Good to be here.